So I showed you my orange carrots, I showed you my yellow carrots, and now we got purple carrots.
Well, them pretty. Is that what they call the purple days?
Purple haze.
Purple haze. Days, haze, I get them mixed up.
What's unique, what's interesting to me is in the past when I've grown them, they were all this real dark color purple here. But you can see here, we got some of them that's a lot lighter. And these all come from pulled up right in the same spot there. So interesting that some of them are darker and some of them are lighter colored. But if you take, let's take this one right here. And if you cut them up, you see they're orange on the inside there.
Yes, they are.
You want to try that?
Well, I'm going to dip it in something I got right here. I got something
you
special.
You dip a carrot in honey?
I got something special right here. Look at there.
I ain't never seen that done before.
That's going to be good.
I might should wash them off a little better. They're a little gritty.
They're a little gritty, but it's okay.
This right here, this purple haze variety, is my favorite variety for cutting. I just like to slice them up raw and put them on a salad, and it's really, really good stuff.
That's pretty doggone spiffy right there.
And now these ain't as big as the Bolero or the Yellowstone ones. These take a little bit longer to mature, and we got a video coming out next week talking about planting spring carrots, harvesting overwinter carrots, and then turning around and planting the spring crop as well. So be on the lookout for that.
Good deal.
And let's say hey to everybody while we're here. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Row by Row Garden Show. I'm Travis.
And I'm Greg.
And we're super excited to have you with us tonight. We got a great show planned. We got a special guest coming up in a minute that everybody's going to really like, talking about pollinators, bees, and how they can help your garden. And we'll do a little show and tell, talk about our garden. And if you have any questions during the show, as always, put those in the comments below. We'll be glad to get to them on next week's show. So, how is that? Is that good?
That's good. You want to dip you some in there?
I need to wipe mine off a little bit.
It won't hurt you. Who knew we got something? We started new here.
Starting new.
Called honey carrots.
Honey carrots. That's pretty good.
Yep.
That's some good honey.
Which I like honey, yeah.
It's been dry around here.
It's been a little bit dry. I'm irrigating as we speak. Been having to run the water a little bit. I got a lot of things going on in the garden. My pole beans is up, my rattlesnake pole beans. Got my tomatoes planted, got my squash cucumbers up. My potatoes are kicking along. Man, I got a lot going on. It's that time.
Yeah, I know you don't subscribe to my theory using the drip tape on the onions, but man, this time of year when it gets dry,
well,
it sure enough makes it easy.
On a wet year, you can get by, but I could have used it this year.
And my taters, I've got the slowest growing taters I've ever seen.
Yep. And I may have to give you what lesson on tater growing.
And I don't know, just like you need a lesson on carrot growing, huh?
Yeah.
And I made a little bit of a boo-boo with my new dream garden. You know, I've got those six subplots, and I planted my taters on one end because I thought it would be easier to plant everything kind of shifting going one direction. And I planted them in the hardest dirt that I got on that new configuration there. I really should have planted them on the other end where I'm going to plant my corn. So I got some nice soft dirt there. So,
yep.
You know, taters like well-drained sandy soil. And
they do.
What I planted them in is quite the opposite. It's kind of rocky.
Yep.
Doesn't have good
tips. I may have traded you taters for carrots this year.
We might have to do some trading and swapping around taters for carrots. You had your video last week about watermelon transplants. If you live in a cold area, you know, grow them watermelon for transplants. We got okra transplants coming up right now.
We got a greenhouse full.
Greenhouse full. We got some cut flowers started. We'll do a show on cut flowers coming up.
Yep.
And we also have, you've got your corn planted, your honey select corn, and there'll be a video coming out tomorrow on that. So keep an eye on that. And just busy.
It's that time of the year. Today was the first day of spring. No, today spring started, I guess is the best way to put it.
What's the difference?
I don't know. That's what all the news said.
So what, it wouldn't make it the first day of spring?
Yeah, I guess so.
So first day of spring
all,
is here.
You got me all confused up.
Spring is here, yeah. Spring is here. And we'll have to do some more shows on fruit trees coming up soon because I got mulberries that are about to be ready and lots of good stuff there. Enough about our gardens. Let's get into what we really going to talk about on today's show.
Pollination.
Pollination. Pollination is important. Beneficial insects are important. You got to have that pollination for a lot of crops out there. And we've got a special guest that's going to join us on today's show. We've got Gary with Bee Leave Honey is going to come in here. And that was some delicious honey they got
that
there.
That was some of his honey.
And he's going to talk about pollinators, raising bees, which you've done a little bit of.
I've done enough to be dangerous.
Enough to be dangerous. It's not my expertise at all. So I'm going to step away and I'm going to let I'm going to let Gary jump in here and take over, and really hope you enjoy it.
And boom, just like that, we got Gary here. Gary is a full-time bee man.
Yep.
You make your living doing bees. Yes, that is what you do.
Yes.
So we wanted to talk about bees in the garden today because pollination is such important when people are growing these cucumbers and squash and melons and gourds. Anytime I have somebody call in or ask me, say, man, I just had trouble with my squash and all that, the first thing that comes to mind is you had poor pollination.
Yes. Pollination is about the most important thing to having a garden or any crop, because if you don't have pollination, you can't produce fruit. You can't produce vegetables.
So that squash plant has got a male and a female flower on it.
Yeah.
And that pollen has to be took from that male flower and transferred to that female flower for it to have a good fruit on there.
Yes, yes.
So we're going to shoot up here a little picture here of what it looks like when you have poor pollination. The fruit will actually rot. It looks like blossom end rot, but it'll actually rot or either be distorted or it won't set fruit at all.
That's right. That's right. Your plants will bloom and bloom and bloom and never produce fruit. If you have ever had a squash plant or anything, it blooms constantly and never makes a squash. That's what's going on. It's not getting pollinated.
And we've had some, I know around here, but everywhere is having a problem with natural or, I guess, what's the word here for bees? The old bees we used to see growing in pine trees back when I was a boy, and the turpentine hollers, there would be wild bees in there.
Yeah.
But I guess wild bees all over the lower 48 is having problems. I mean, we don't have near the bees we used to have.
That's due to environment.
Yep.
They're running out of environment. They're running out of room. So much stuff's being farmed and cultivated and land cleared and took in. There's no fence rows. It's growing up in weeds and stuff, you know, for the bees to feed off of.
And chemicals, too.
And
we got a lot more chemicals that we used to use.
Yes.
And a lot of people don't use them like they should. So that's caused a lot of our honeybee decline.
Yes.
One of the chemicals that I think has a lot of problem with our honeybee decline is neonicotinoids, is the ones that they inject into the vegetables and things like that, I think causes some major problems. And there's been some research that back that up, but that's just a hunch that I got.
Yeah, I think a lot of it may be the same thing you're talking about, but it's almost like a nerve agent that
they take
back to the hive, and the old chemicals was a contact kill. When the bee landed on it, it killed them then, and they never took it back. Now they're taking those nerve agents back to the hive and it's killing the queen, thus the whole colony.
Yep. So they're being the reason we need to be more concerned about pollinators, bringing them in or supplementing our garden somehow or another with pollinators. Now, what insects are the best pollinators for the garden?
Probably your honeybee, a European honeybee. I mean, you have natural stuff around. It's like bumblebees and wasps and yellow jackets. Well, I don't think yellow jackets are not useful for anything,
but they'll swell you up.
they're mean, but and they rob honeybees. So if you got yellow jackets around, you probably best to do away with them because they will terrorize your honeybees and rob them out constantly. They're flesh eaters and they'll also steal honey and stuff.
So bumblebee is somewhat, I see them in the gardens, but the real workers out there is the honeybee.
The real workers, the backbone of it is the European honeybee. In the U.S., there's no natural bee that's close to the honeybee, the European honeybee. They was imported from Europe.
Mm-hmm. So some good things to do, some good practices to do in the garden is some companion planting to do there to draw in the beneficials. If you don't necessarily have a beehive close by, which I do, But if you don't have a beehive, if you want to draw in some of those natural pollinators, what are some good plants to plant in your garden to draw them in? I'm assuming flowers.
Yes, flowers. But be careful. Do some research and make sure that the bee can reach the nectar or the pollen in the flower, because some flowers have a deep trumpet on them and the bee's tongue's not but so long and they can't, like honeysuckles and stuff, a honeybee can't reach it. Butterflies can, because they have a longer, what I call a straw that they curl out, you know.
I didn't know that. Can,
red clover, crimson clover, honeybees can't reach the bottom of the clover, but they can white clover.
Really?
Yeah.
So white clover is preferred over crimson clover?
Yes, white clover. I know crimson's cheaper, but white clover like Durana and stuff like that made by Pennington is a much better clover, because bees, it has a shorter trumpet on the on what I call a trumpet on the flower, and the bees can reach the nectar in the bottom of it.
That's interesting.
The red clover you see grow on the side of the road.
Yeah, the crimson clover.
Yeah, crimson, the bees don't hardly work it. They can't get much from it.
Wow. All right, so where if somebody wants to supplement their bees, if you want to get some bees in, now I've got a hive I keep close to my garden, and I just called another hive the other day, a swarm. Old Man Baker over there at Edelton.
Oh, yeah.
Old Man Baker called me, and I went over and I got a swarm out of history. So I got two hives now. But I keep a hive here. So if somebody wants to supplement and get a hive of bees to keep close to their garden for pollination, which I think is a good thing to do, what is the best way to go about that?
Well, they can purchase bees, but they need to do a little education and educate themselves before they buy bees. And we do that a lot when we sell bees to people. We kind of educate them on what they're getting into, on cost, and how to care for their bees and keep them alive.
Yep. Now, there's a couple of different ways you can do it, and I'm going to reach over here and get this right here. There is packaged bees, which a lot of people sell, which I'm not a big fan of.
Right.
And there's also where you can buy what we call a nuc, which is N-U-C.
Yes.
And that's what this is.
Yes.
Now this is, in my opinion, this is the preferred way to go about it, is buying your nuc. Do you agree?
Yes, I agree. Because your hat, you might turn it up so they can see the frames and stuff in there. This is a five frame, what we call a five frame nuc of bees.
I'm going to pull this out right here. That's how big it would be.
Yeah, that's a frame. And we make our own, we get wax left over from our bees when we have a colony to leave or something, we melt down and we reuse the wax and put it in and let them build their own comb. It's more of a natural way of keeping it. And bees don't like plastic, but they love that wax.
So when you start out, if you bought you a new, what does the new normally run?
Probably anywhere from 150 to 175.
You would have this right here. This is what we call a starter hive.
You would have, for that price, most people sells the queen, the bees, and her five frames.
Right.
Right there. The box would probably, a lot of times, would cost you extra.
Yep. So I know some people sell them in a cardboard box, it looks just like this.
Yes.
And then you transfer them back over to a wood box.
Transfer them to a wooden box. But a lot of times, when you buy a nook like that, it's supposed to be full of bees.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to outgrow it. And
right.
Of course, when your bees outgrow their home, if they don't have any more room, they will make another queen, and half the old queen and half the bees will leave. That's called
swarm.
A swarm.
Swarm.
That's Mother Nature's way of them birthing.
Yep.
And to keep that from happening, the best thing to do is, could you hand us that box right there? When you purchase your nook, go ahead and get you a bigger box. This is an eight-frame box. Instead of holding five, it holds eight, and you can put three more frames in here, and that'll give the bees something larger to work with to build on. That'll buy you about two more weeks of growth on them.
So to get started, you need to do a little education. There's plenty of YouTube channels out there, and there's people like you that you can come over there and spend a day with you, and you'll teach them all the ins and outs.
Yes.
You're going to need a suit. You're going to need a little bit of equipment, and you're going to need a couple of frames there. It can be really intimidating to get started, but it is a great skill set to learn. By no means am no expert at bees, but I do know enough I can keep a hive of bees, which is really all I want to do.
Yes.
You know, I just want to keep bees to pollinate. I have pulled honey off mine, but I normally don't. So to get started, do your little research. Don't be intimidated. And look here, it is a great thing to know about bees and how to tend to bees for later on.
Yes, bees will educate you.
Bees will educate you.
Beyond your intelligence. Yes, it will. A lot of times.
So this swarm that I caught the other day, I was moving them down to another place because they was a little angry.
Yeah.
And it was getting dark, and I had put my little hood thing on, and I was in a hurry, and I didn't zip this here part up. I got down there, and I was pulling the frames out and messing with it. And they got amongst inside my suit. I noticed them because I could see them in between there, and I knew I was in a problem.
Yeah, that's a bad ordeal.
That's a bad ordeal.
In there with it, you.
Yes. And they got the gnawing on me down here, but where they really worked on me, that's my neck.
Yes.
And I mean, they worked on me, and I was coming out of my suit. I was a hollering, I was a running, and a jumping. I couldn't get loose.
Oh, yeah, you can't get
but away. But I fared well. I probably got stung 40, 50 times and all. And like I said, the ones on my body didn't really bother me a whole lot. But anytime they get me on my neck or face or head, it bothers me a little bit. Yeah,
a lot of times I don't wear a bee suit. I just wear a veil because I don't want to be stung around my eyes or in the facial area or nose or anywhere. That's the most painful place I've been stung, is in the nose. everything automatically just waters up. You can't see or nothing.
But yeah.
And that too, when you're getting into bees, it's a fear factor thing of being stung or attacked by them, and that's really 90% of the time not going to happen unless you're pushing their buttons.
Yeah.
You know, they'll let you know when to back off. They'll start roaring up and they'll get louder and more aggressive.
Yeah.
And your equipment that you put into them is however much you want to spend, how much money you have access to spend. You can spend as much as you want, but if you're really not scared of bees and you've gotten stung a few times and it don't bother you, you can buy a mosquito head net from Walmart for $2 and a baseball cap and a long sleeve shirt and work bees.
Right.
You know, you don't have to have a lot of fancy equipment.
I prefer to have a little bit heavier
equipment. Yeah, that's just according to each individual, you know, what they prefer.
How many hives per acre? So if we got a half acre garden, how much we need, how many hives? One hive?
I would have one. You can get by with one, but you always want to try to keep two. And the reason being is something was to happen to one. It was to get sick or weak or lose its queen. Then you have resources next door that you can pull from. Say you lose your queen and they didn't make another one, or something happened to her going out on her mating flight, you can pull more resources, more eggs and bees from next door and put in there with them and give them a second chance at life.
So if I got a half acre or acre garden, I need to just figure on two hives.
I would always try to keep two hives. And two hives for the average gardener is a plenty. And a strong hive like this 8-frame box we showed you earlier, a strong hive that's full of bees like that, it'll make a 5-gallon bucket full of honey on an average year. So
yeah,
that's
a lot of honey.
That's a lot of honey.
Yep.
That's cheap Christmas presents.
What's your preference on the type of bee? I know there's Italians out there, you was talking about Europeans. So is there a preference there of what kind you prefer?
Mostly the easiest bee to keep is a Carnolian.
And that's Italian. That sounds Italian to me.
It's a Carnolian is basically a bee that was come up here in the southeast. It was kind of bred here, but they produce a little bit more on the heavier side of the honey than a Italian does. Italian basically makes more bees and builds up more brood, and they'll work themselves to death basically and out of food if you don't keep them fed and stay ahead.
So they're a little more high maintenance.
Yes.
Okay.
The best bee is the bee that you can keep alive.
Right.
Any bee that you can keep alive, if you know somebody that can, whatever you're wanting, that can point you in that direction and however you want to move forward with it, is the best way to do it.
Now, how far will the bee travel to get to pollinate something?
The bees cover a 5-mile diameter from their hive every day.
Oh, I didn't realize that. I thought, I've heard 3 miles, 1 mile, is 5 miles.
They go 2.5 miles in each direction.
Okay.
Up two now. They might not, if they have your garden to work with that day, you know, they might.
But they
not
can go, travel up to 2.5 miles.
They can travel up 2.5 miles,
okay.
Yes.
And honey. Honey's a great thing. I prefer to buy honey from a local beekeeper. Yes. When I don't draw off mine, which I did one year, I like to buy honey that's local. I don't buy honey from the grocery store, from the Susie B, from the imported honey. That's just not something I want to do.
A lot of honey you buy at grocery stores and big food chains is half corn syrup.
Right.
You know.
And you don't know where it comes from.
Yeah, you don't know where it comes from overseas, and you don't know what kind of chemicals is in it and
right.
things like that. I mean, and that's something we do too. I try to teach somebody that's going to have a garden and they're going to have their own bees and they're going to have their own honey. They need to kind of be as natural with them as possible because you're going to be eating honey. The bees is going to be working your garden. So if you're going to be eating it, you're wanting it as natural and healthy for you as possible, you know, and you kind of want to know what's going in your beehive. And we teach organic treatment-free beekeeping. I mean, I teach it to people all the time, you know, but it takes a little bit more of an advanced beekeeper to be able to do it successfully. But with some trial and error, they can get there.
So if somebody wanted to buy a hive and get a hive in their garden and they don't know anything, they could contact you. You
yes.
can sell them to bees, you can sell them to equipment, and you can
yes.
give them the training to do it.
Yes, I can sell them to bees, all the equipment they would need, their head nets, their veils, their jackets, hive tools, smokers. We carry all those products, boxes, lids, bottom boards, feeders. Anything they want to do with a bee, we carry it and sell it.
Man, that's good stuff. Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'm back in the shotgun
yes,
seat
you
now.
Are.
We want to thank Gary for joining us. I really enjoyed that talk about bees.
I learned
a couple
things.
Got me fired up, wanting to get me some
yeah,
bees.
Yeah, I learned a couple of things.
So it's BEE-LIEVE, and we'll put some links up here so you can go check those guys out. They really know their stuff and can really help you get started. If you're wanting to get into bees, or maybe you're already into bees and need a few tips to help you really kind of get to an
advanced
level.
If nothing else, you need to understand it. If you're going to grow a garden, you need to understand your pollinators.
All right. So let's get into our questions this week. And as always, you know, ask questions during the show. If we answer your question on the show, send us an email to cusserve@hosstools.com and we'll send you a nice prize. So our first question here is from Sean Batchelder, and he says, I live not far from you boys. Have you tried growing maters in the fall? I know the disease slash bug pressure is off the hook here in August and September. Thanks.
Yes, I have. I've been successful at doing that. However, it is a lot more to it growing it in the fall than in the springtime. You got to get the plants in where we live. You got to get them in by the 4th of July. I know that seems a little early, but you got to get them in there because you know, never know when you're going to have an early frost. You have an early frost, you can do a lot of work and lose all your tomatoes. Get them in early and definitely use one of the disease-resistant varieties, whether it be Brickyard, Mountain Glory, or Bella Rosa. Then stay on a spray program down to the T with your neem oil. You probably need to put something like Complete Disease Control on there pretty regular, but your insecticides, some of your neem oil, your BTs, because your insect pressure is going to be a lot higher. Stay on the program, have it on drip because it gets hot and dry that time mm-hmm. of the year, and you can do it. It is possible. It's not as easy as spring, but by all means, it is possible.
And like you mentioned, planting in July, our whitefly pressure don't really accelerate until mid-August, kind of into September a little bit.
So, and some years it's more than others. Some years we have terrible whitefly issue, and some years it's not so bad.
And you can't really ever expect the fall crop to outperform the spring crop, but it is a good way to supplement
sure.
if you want fresh tomatoes in fall. What's our second question?
Well, we got Mr. Michael Morris here. It says, I'm new to drip irrigation, that is, and the stuff just seems fragile. Would it be better to use the heavier tape and just use it for a few additional seasons?
So I use the 8mm tape in my garden and always have. Now we've had customers who were wanting to save the stuff and wanting the longer lifespan out of it, go get the 15mm tape. And I can tell you that the majority of people that do that end up being unhappy with the 15mm tape and want the 8mm tape. The 8mm tape is just more flexible. It's easier to work with. If you're pulling it up, re-putting it back down and all that, it's just going to be easier to work with. The 15mm tape is really designed to be put somewhere and left there for several years. Perennials like blackberries, you know,
asparagus,
blueberries, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So you can reuse that 8mm tape. I've reused certain stretches for 4 to 5 times before, and it'd be fine. In fact, in my carrot video that's coming up, I'm showing reusing some tape. But you really like the pliability and the flexibility of the 8mm tape. Is going to work much better for you for annuals in the vegetable garden.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Good deal. Glad we finally agree on something today. All right. Well, that's going to do it for tonight's show. Hit that subscribe button if you hadn't already, or hit that share button if you're watching on Facebook. Spread the word. Tell your friends about us. And as always, we are glad you joined us tonight, and we will see you next week.
Take care.